We want to continue building up what we're calling the structure of our relationship with Hashem. So last week, we talked about the most basic element, the mitzvah of Emunah, which is about awareness. That's obviously the most basic element in a relationship. Now we want to move on, once we're aware, to the next element, the next dynamic that is very essential in a relationship, and especially in our relationship with Hashem, and that's what we'll call appreciation. Appreciation in a very broad sense, meaning appreciation generally, colloquially, is used specifically about gratitude, but appreciation at the root begins with before gratitude. The word appreciation literally in the dictionary means a proper evaluation of something. You can make an appreciation of some item's value. Right? It's nothing about gratitude. It's about assessing what it is, evaluating it. Now, the reason appreciation is used for gratitude is because when someone is doing good things for you and you properly realize it, meaning you have a proper evaluation of what they're doing for you, the automatic result should be gratitude. Therefore, in Lashon Kodesh also we have, how do you say gratitude in Lashon Kodesh? We call hakaras hatoy, noticing the good. So again, it also begins with what we call appreciation. First is hakara. Before hakara satoy, there is hakara. You have to take a note of what's going on. So let's again start in terms, like we've been discussing last week, start in terms of a human relationship. We'll start in terms of a human relationship. Again, this can also be between spouses, working partners, and other relationships. Appreciation is a fundamental element. Let's say, for example, my great-grandfather used to say, the Gemara says that a wife, can either be anywhere between the best thing and worst thing that happened to a person. The Gemara shows two psukim. Matzah or moitzeh, right? The Gemara says. Tell a person, matzah or moitzeh. Matzah isha matzah toy. Person finds a wife he has found good. This is getting a good wife is considered the epitome of a sign of Hashem's favor for you. And then there's another pasuk that says, "Moitzei ani mal mimavet hasayisha." I find a wife, a woman, more bitter than death. This obviously goes in both directions. I had my Rebbe said that he one time a couple came to him; they were having difficulties, and they wanted to speak to him. They wanted to consult with him. The husband pulled my Rebbe aside and told him he wanted to have a chance to tell him beforehand exactly what his wife's problems were and what the root of the problem is, etc. Give him a whole description, and he really had his wife all figured out. So my Rebbe said to him, you figured out an awful lot about your wife. There's just one thing about your wife that you'll never know, and it's actually a very, very central part of her life. And that is how it is being married to you. That you can never figure out. You have no idea at all what that feels like. So you have a lot of your life figured out except for one very, very central aspect of our existence. What it feels like being married to you. So, but what's the point that I'm making? Let's say I have a person goes through life, relates to their spouse as, no, I have to do chesed with this person. You know what, sorry, I'm going to take a step back to my great-grandfather. My great-grandfather noted that the term used in the pasuk, when it talks about how wonderful a wife is, the past tense is used. He who found a wife found good. When we talk about the present tense, when we talk about a bad experience, the present tense is used. My great-grandfather said, this is a lesson. Often, when a person gets married, they see all kinds of great virtues. in the other person, otherwise they wouldn't have wanted to get married. You see all kinds of great things about them. But as they get used to it, they stop noticing it. And therefore, 3 months, half a year into the marriage, they start becoming oblivious to each other's virtues. However, what about the irritating aspects of the personality? What about the irritating characteristics that your spouse has? Those also, do you get used to it for 2 weeks and then you stop noticing it? No, each day it grates even more. And therefore, what happens is, in many cases, after a year or two of marriage, the only thing one of the spouses can think of about their partner is all the irritating things. What virtues are there? They have to scratch their heads. Because, so, this is said as the pshat and the psukim. When you're talking about the good that you found in your wife, that's something of the past. While I was engaged, and in the week of Sheva Brachas, there were all kinds of virtues. But by now, they're not noticed anymore. All the virtues are a thing of the past. But when you're talking about all the bad elements, the unpleasant things, the annoyances, that's very, very much in the present. Moitzeani, I find it all the time. Now, this is more than just a dig at our human nature. This is a job that we have. In order to be able to appreciate, we have to be putting thought into it. We have to realize that human nature is not to appreciate. Human nature is to be living with all kinds of good things, to get used to it, to stop noticing it, to integrate it in our consciousness to the extent that it becomes a given, taken for granted, and then you stop noticing it at all, you stop enjoying it, even though you're still benefiting from it all the time. But you don't notice it, you don't enjoy it, and when you're asked, can you list virtues? You can't think of anything. Even though these are things that you're experiencing on a daily basis. So let's say you have such a person. A person is married to a spouse, 40 years, has long forgotten their partner's virtues, but I know I have to be a good spouse, and therefore I focus on doing chesed. I'm married to an undeserving partner. I focus on doing chesed, and I'm good at it. I'm busy doing chesed the whole time. I kind of view my spouse with a certain compassion, condescending compassion, and I deign to do chesed with them. Now, that person might think he's virtuous, but actually, he could be doing a great injustice. If the other spouse really actually has all kinds of virtues that you're benefiting from all the time, but in your mind you're just doing chesed to them and being married to them, it's not fair. It's not fair, and it's actually an injustice not to notice all the good things and think that you're just busy doing chesed. And therefore, yes, effort is often required in order to be able to keep conscious of the good things that are present in your partner, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a business partner, whatever other relationships there are, not to become oblivious to them. Human nature, you're fighting gravity, because human nature is that you should become oblivious to it. But if you want a relationship to succeed, it requires thought on the part of each of the different partners to constantly be reviewing, to constantly be analyzing, thinking into what are the virtues. And when your relationship is one of appreciation, it's of a completely different quality than a relationship that's just one of trying to understand the other party and trying to do chesed. Obviously. Right? The famous story is told about a woman who, husband and sons, would work out on the farm every day, and she would come home at night for supper. One day when they came home for supper, she served hay. It was hay on the table. They sat down, they didn't even notice, they started eating, and suddenly they spat it out, they said, "What's this?" So she said, "Well, for the last 20 years I've been serving supper and I never heard any notice taken, so I figured I might as well make things easy and just bring in hay from the yard. Why?" So they were eating good suppers and enjoying it for many years, but they were completely oblivious to it, without taking notice. So it's not natural to take notice, and we have to make a conscientious exercise out of it. So now the truth is that this is something, okay, it really deserves elaboration when we're talking about spouses, and that's a subject in itself. But now I'm using this as a baseboard, as a mashal, for our relationship with Hashem, because that's our subject these weeks. But Hashem, we'll get to interpersonal subjects as well. The Rambam says that a person who believes that Hashem is a physical body is an apikoros. A person who believes that Hashem is a physical body is an apikoros. Why? Because to misunderstand what Hashem is about in such a bad way is actually heretic. It's not just, okay, I got the wrong picture, what's the big deal? I like Hashem, I'm willing to do all His mitzvahs, I just think He's got a body, bigger body than me. I think He's got a body. No, we see that misunderstanding Hashem in such a way, to such an extent, is considered not getting it, to the extent that it's called apikoresis. Now, if we'll take this to a subtler level, misunderstanding Hashem is a sacrilege. To have the wrong conception of Hashem. I'll give an example. Rav Shimshon Pinkus gave a mashal. He said that there was a sefer from earlier times who said that La'asid Lavoy, the Goyim will tell Hashem, all the idolaters will tell Hashem, all the other religions will tell Hashem, we want reward for serving you too. And we certainly don't want to be punished for not serving you. Why? Because we really meant to serve you. Our intentions were good. We just thought that that's Hashem. Right? They said a mashal. Mashal amad avadrein. It's a mashal of an imposter who passed through a kingdom, going from place to place, claiming to be the king. And the townspeople all came out. They heard that the king was coming. He had a few people working with him. They sent messages ahead that the king is coming. And the townspeople all came out and they paid him tribute and they honored him and they made a big fanfare. Now the king hears about this. A person imposing to be the king is treason. And to pay homage to someone other than the king is also punishable by death. So therefore the king sent out notices to all these different cities that they're in hot water. They're part of a rebellion. It's considered a rebellion. Right? To herald as king a person who isn't the king is a rebellion. They told him, you folks are in big trouble. So they sent an advocate to the king with a very good argument. They said, it isn't true. We were honoring you. We weren't honoring somebody else. Somebody came and said he was you. All the homage that we showed him wasn't rebellion. On the contrary, we were honoring you. Just we thought that was you. And therefore, the king lets them off the hook. So this sefer wrote that the same will be true for the guy. They'll come and say, we wanted to honor you. We wanted to worship you. This, whoever it is, this entity came and misled us, said this is Hashem. So we worshipped him, but we were intending to worship you. So they'll be let off the hook. So Shimshon Pinkus said, Chas v'shalom. He said, the mashal is not the same as the nimshal. He said, a person who worships an idol, a person who worships a yashka, or a person who worships the one who Mohammed portrays to be Allah, is not the same as in the mashal. He said, the mashal would be more something like this. What happens if somebody wanted to make fun of the king? So he brought to the town a pig, led it through the street on a leash, and he told everybody, this is the king. And they came out and they all heralded it and paid it homage. And then they tell the king afterwards, oh, we thought that was you. The king will say, you're adding insult to injury. You certainly have to be killed. You thought a pig was me? So Shimshon Pinkus said, no, it's not going to be a good excuse for the guy. For them to say, we thought this was Hashem, we thought that was Hashem, it's not going to be a good excuse. To misunderstand Hashem in such a terrible way is just adding insult to injury. So if so, yes, we're seeing that misunderstanding Hashem is in itself considered a sacrilege. Now, in a very, very blatant, broad, coarse way, we talk about misunderstanding Hashem as having a body, misunderstanding Hashem as this idol, as that idol. But misunderstanding Hashem could also be on much subtler levels as well. I'll give an example. I was once talking to a yeshiva bacher, a chashuv yeshiva bacher. Yeshiva bacher was very accomplished in his learning, masmim, but he was having certain difficulties. And when I was talking to him, I started asking him, I said, what is it that motivates him? Big masmim. He learned hours on end. I asked him, what is it that motivates you to learn so much? I was trying to get to the root of his motivation in order to be able to draw on it and put it into a bit more positive framework. He was getting very nervous, OCD-ish they call it in modern terms. And I was trying to figure out how to make a switch in his mind. So I asked him, what is it that motivates you to learn like this? He gave me an answer that shocked me. He said, you are so Einish. Fear of punishment. Meaning, Bittul Torah is a crime, and one will be punished for that. That's what motivated him to his spectacular achievements. This was a very chashuv bacher. Because he was scared of the Yiras HaEinish. So I said to him, I was a little surprised at the answer. I was thinking to hear, he wanted to become great, ambition. No ambition. His non-ambition was expressed. Yiras HaEinish. So I said, okay. Now tell me something. Do you think that you are succeeding in avoiding the Einish through all your intense learning? I said, I don't know. Meaning this was a guy who was really driving himself almost off the deep end, trying to maximize every second, because he knows that any half a minute that he does not learn properly, he's gonna, I don't know what, burn, be toasted. And with all of his efforts, and knowing that he's driving himself off the deep end, he's still worried, perhaps he's not satisfying Hashem. Perhaps he's not making it, perhaps he's still falling short, and he's still going to be subject to all those fires of Gehenna that await a person who only pushed himself to the deep end but didn't push himself over. Now, on a subtle level, this also is a much more subtle element of what we're talking about, misunderstanding Hashem in a sacrilegious way. A person who thinks that Hashem is waiting there, he basically sets you up in a trap. Life is a trap. Hashem has all kinds of traps for you all over the place. Sets standards that are way above you. Or sets standards for the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Today, we don't have that spiritual capacity, but Hashem says nothing doing. The standards still exist. And if you're nowhere near fulfilling those standards, you are inevitably headed for damnation. So, what are you imagining Hashem to be? That's a sacrilege. It's on a certain level, it's a chisonin in emunah. It's obviously, certainly, chas v'shalom, I'm not going to call that up in kosis. But it's the same problem in a much more subtle way. Since a person didn't make a point of studying who Hashem is, studying Hashem a little better, he has a completely misconstrued picture of who Hashem is, and therefore sees Hashem almost as chas v'shalom, almost as a mean, sadistic, obviously I'm talking in harsh terms, I don't think anybody thinks this way in a conscious way, but the point is, this is a very big misconstrual of who Hashem is, and this is a problem. But we'll talk even more than that. Say a person doesn't think of Hashem in these terms, but the way a person views it is, we're here in this world to suffer. The reward we get in the next world, Hashem wants us to suffer in this world. Piety and suffering are synonymous. That also is misconstruing what Hashem is. It's misconstruing what Hashem wants your existence to be like. These are all, on a subtle way, not having a proper understanding of Hashem is a sacrilege. And yes, the truth is that Hashem expects us. Again, if we're talking about a healthy relationship, Hashem expects us to understand and appreciate who He is in order to have a relationship with us. If a person is supposed to have a relationship, let's say, Chas v'Shalom, a girl comes from an abusive home, and she's getting married now to a very fine man, but she's used to her home where her father blew up about all kinds of crazy things and was busy beating everybody up the whole time. So she enters marriage with the understanding that in order to have a good relationship, she has to be completely submissive, she has to be ready to take the blows, and that's how she approaches her husband, with fear, kind of scared. It's not going to be a good relationship, because she's completely misunderstanding what this is about. So therefore, it's important, it's fundamental, it's actually, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, it's a chiyuv d'oraisa to study Hashem's kindliness, to take note of these things, in order to begin appreciating who Hashem is, in order to establish the right dynamics in our relationship with Hashem. So here's where we come to the subject of what the Chovetz Chaim is called Bechina. Bechina means studying Hashem. And studying Hashem means not just through texts, but it means studying Hashem in our own lives, studying Hashem around us, starting to see signs of Hashem's greatness, to see signs of Hashem's kindliness, to see signs of Hashem's love of us in our own lives. Now this is a big avodah. But this is really what's meant to be the basis of our relationship with Hashem, our understanding. It's meant to be the basis of our understanding of Hashem, and certainly of our relationship with Hashem. And this also is something that a person can be doing more and more and more. I'll give a little anecdote just to illustrate how this works and how it defines the dynamics. There are a few elements here. By studying Hashem, there are a few results that will come out. First of all, it will result, when you see all the kindliness that He does for us, which, as we'll discuss later, by and large we're oblivious to, when you start taking over, when you start learning exercises to become aware of them, this results in love. It results in a sense of gratitude, which are both very, very important elements of our relationship with Hashem. Also, when you start noticing Hashem's greatness, it starts developing a sense of awe, which even further deepens your appreciation of the fact that He's interested in a relationship with you. We'll give an example. When Pesach Yagoyim used to go on a self-imposed goal. This was a common practice in earlier times. They used to go on self-imposed exiles. Travel from place to place in anonymity. And okay, what exactly the idea of it was, it's not for us. But this is something that many of the great people of the past used to do. Now, Pesach Yagoyim was world famous. But there weren't pictures in those times. Jews, the world over, knew his name, but they didn't know what he looked like. And therefore, even though every community knew about him very well, he was able to travel in anonymity because people didn't know what he looked like. He would travel from town to town. And basically would find accommodations in each place and stay for whatever purposes he wanted to achieve and then move on. One time he came to a town, came into an inn, a local inn, and there was someone from his hometown in the inn who recognized him. And he spread the word. He made the innkeeper aware. Well, I mean, I skipped a step. When he came to the inn, this inn was run by a good conscientious Jew, who greeted all of his guests very heartily with the Seder Panagiotis and did whatever he could to make all of their stays pleasant. Okay, Pesach Yagoyim got the same treatment. He got a hearty welcome, smile, he was set up, fine. Meanwhile, this fellow from his hometown recognized him and he suddenly made a whole hullabaloo. This is Pesach Yagoyim. Before you knew it, the word spread like wildfire all around the town. People came milling to the hotel, everybody wanted to see him, to speak to him, to ask him questions. The button came from all the surrounding neighborhoods. Gudmagar was here in town. And basically the inn was besieged. Straight through the night, people were there crowding and trying to get close to him and to talk to him and asking for a bracha and asking a shaylin. This went on basically straight through the night. His anonymity was blown, and straight through the night he was busy with this. Finally, when the crowd dispersed, the innkeeper came over to him with tears in his eyes and he said, "I beg you for forgiveness." The Psadi Gaon said, "What?" "I said, I didn't treat you properly." "So what do you mean? You treated me very nicely." The innkeeper said, "Yeah, I treated you nicely. I treated you nicely the same way I treat everybody nicely. But if I would have known who you are, it would have been a whole different level of treatment. I would have laid out the red carpet. I would have put my whole inn at your disposal." There's a difference between treating a person nicely and the way he relates to the esteemed Gadol HaDor. Okay, that was that story. When Psadi Gaon came home, came away from that story disturbed. It affected him in a big way. Told the story at home, and he said, "This story really got me thinking. And it inspired me to tshuva." He said, "This is really the way it works with us and Hashem all the time. A person, as we've been discussing, when a person starts endeavoring to start noticing Hashem and gaining an appreciation of who Hashem is, what He's doing for me, how great Hashem is, the Chavis Halvavis and other Sfarim say that this is something you can be increasing every day. Every day you increase your appreciation of who Hashem is and of everything He's doing for you. This is really endless." See, I heard about Victor Miller for many years. Anybody who heard him a little bit heard how this can be an endless endeavor. How you can study the signs of wisdom and kindliness and basically everything around. You heard about Victor Miller going on for hours about the tongue, about the eye, about a watermelon seed, about a dandelion, weeds. He was able to go on and on about it. He really understood that this was an endless and infinite endeavor. And the more you study it, the more your awe of Hashem develops. And therefore, Dr. Gaon said, when we gain a deeper appreciation of who Hashem is, we should be mortified that yesterday we didn't relate to Him properly because we didn't properly understand who He is. It's like a person, right, who comes into a yeshiva and bumps into somebody when he walks in, knocks him over. Okay, he feels bad. Then it turns out that he knocked over the Rosh Yeshiva. All of a sudden he's mortified again anew. Right? You have a certain feeling towards somebody, but then when you suddenly start realizing quite who they are, you become mortified that you didn't relate to them right in the first place. The Psadi Gaon said, this is something that should be going on a daily basis in our relationship with Hashem. I gain a deeper appreciation of who Hashem is and what He's doing for me, and I say, oh boy, I wasn't relating to you right yesterday. Because again, the appreciation is really what defines the dynamics of the relationship. The more I understand what Hashem is doing for me, the more indebted I feel to Him. The more motivated I am to dedicate myself to Him. The greater I understand Hashem is, the more awed I am by the fact that I'm capable of relating to Him. And I act with more reverence. And yes, today I should feel mortified that yesterday I wasn't acting with enough reverence. Because yesterday I didn't quite appreciate how great He is. So now, as we're seeing, this opinion of learning to appreciate Hashem, learning to note, not just to know that Hashem exists, but to know exactly what that means. I know Hashem exists somewhere in the sky, but do I really appreciate what it means that He is involved with me? Do I really appreciate when I say He's involved with me, what that means, everything that He's doing for me? The more I appreciate it, the deeper and more profound my relationship with Him is going to become. So yes, we're seeing that it's a means of developing a relationship with Hashem. But besides that, Rabbi Yehuda says that it's actually a mitzvah saseh in and of itself. It's a chiyuv that we have to make a point of studying and noting Hashem's kindliness to us. So now, We're going to be discussing this next week as well in more detail, how we actually go about this. But now I just want to show, still in a general way, what it is that Hashem expects of us. For example, Hashem says, I just want to quote a few psukim. Su'u ma'oi me'neichem. This is a pasuk in Yeshaya. Su'u ma'oi me'neichem. U'u mi'vara eile. Hashem tells the Jewish people, lift up your eyes, look at the sun and the moon and the stars, and know who created it all and for what purpose. In other words, what Hashem is telling us is, yeah, we know we have a relationship with Hashem. But Hashem said, no, I want you to appreciate this. Look, there's a sun. Do you know what a sun is? Have you ever studied what a sun is? Do you know what an immense power a sun is? Okay, I can't elaborate on what the sun is. But we all understand that it's major, and anybody who's actually studied it understands what immensity the sun is, and the moon, and the stars, how immense the galaxy is. And Hashem is saying, look at all these awesome things that I've made. Earth is just one of millions. Right? Earth is pretty complex. Earth is a pretty big accomplishment to be able to create an Earth. But Earth is just one of millions. Hashem is saying, do you have an idea of who I am? And look at the awesome phenomena I made. You know why I made them? I made them because I want you to know them and see who I am. So please look at them. Don't just go through your whole life utilizing the sunlight and never taking note of quite what it is. There's an issue of menschlichkeit here. It's an issue of menschlichkeit here. According to the Chovei Salvam, it's the big basis of our relationship with Hashem is about menschlichkeit. You're born into a world that's full of all kinds of things working for your benefit. You have mighty forces working for you. There's a sun. You know how big the sun is and you know how small you are? There's a sun that's working with the sea, which is also a massive creature, in conjunction with the winds and the clouds, to provide you with breakfast. The sun is busy shining on the sea and making water evaporate, go up into the sky, turn into clouds. Then the wind gets to earth, transporting those clouds, moving it over to a place where it will be useful. If it rains over the sea, it's not all that useful. Moving it over to a place where it will be useful. And there, the atmosphere changes, the weather gets cold, the clouds condense, and it rains. And then the soil gets to work. Look at all these mighty forces of nature, massive forces. Look at the machinery that's doing what? Working to provide you with your boring bread for breakfast. So now, a person is born into this world, and he's perfectly fine with that. There's bread, I got teeth, I'm ready to sit down and eat. Never bother to take note of what's going on around me. Because the Nish says, if this is a question that should bother anybody, okay, we're Jews, we're born having all the information fed to us in a silver platter. But he says, how can it be that a person is born into this world, has such an amazing body, and there are such amazing forces that are all revolving around him, making a point of providing you with everything that you need, and you never even took note of it? Your approach is, well, I have teeth, I have a tongue, there's food out there, so let me get to work eating. That's it. It starts and ends with that. Yes, there's a sun making food, so let's start eating. I don't even really care where the food comes from. As far as I'm concerned, there's a fast food joint, I have money in my wallet, I have teeth, and therefore let's go get the burgers. Menschlichkeit. Take note. Someone with a capital S has been very busy activating all kinds of major forces to provide you with that. You have a muscle, right? If a person wakes up one morning, steps out of the house and finds a package on the doorstep, right outside the house. A package on the doorstep, it says, addressed to you. Inside there's $1 million. Cash. Now, how would most people react? An intelligent person would be suspicious. People are not just dropping $1 million on my doorstep. for me to just go out and have a good time. I don't think that there would be any mature, intelligent person who would say, well, $1 million on my doorstep, honey, we're off to vacation. Oh, he's going to call the police, he's going to call his lawyer, is he being blackmailed, is he being framed, what's going on here? No, I don't, in my wildest imagination, I don't think that there's somebody who is just desperate to give me $1 million. There's something behind this. And therefore, no, I'm not going to be quick to suddenly just rush out and start spending it. I want to know what's going on here, what's behind this. So when you're born into such a massive world, you're such a tiny element in such a massive world, that's all working around you, providing you. You have such an amazing body. You study that body. People study biology. And you never once took note of who did all that. Hashem wants you to note these things. Hashem wants you to be mentored. Don't just say, oh, who cares who sent it to me? It's here, I'm off to have a good time. Note these things. There's someone who's been doing these things for you. And what should be the result of this? The result of this, once again, our dynamics in a relationship. Right? We saw the Pasuk in Yeshaya exhorting us to take note of these things. Look up! Hashem put these massive, awesome things in the sky for you to take note of. Don't just go through your life never noticing it. Hashem put it there for you to notice. Don't just go through life not noticing it. It's going to be wasted. What happens when it is noticed? We have an Abba Pasuk of how that looks. David HaMelech said in Tehillim, Ki yireh shomecho ma'aseh v'yitzecho yireh v'kirchovim asher peinanto. Ma'odom kitzis kirenu v'enoish kitzis kidenu. V'kechaseu ma'at me'elikim. David HaMelech says, I look up. He did do what Yeshaya said. Yeshaya said it later. But he did do that. He took notice. There's all kinds of things going on around me. I'm not just living in a vacuum, just focused on my food. So when I do look up and I notice your heavens, Kiresh Shomecho, the heavens, the handy, your handiwork, and the moon and the stars that you created, what's David's response to seeing all that? His response is he's blown over. He says, it's shocking to me that you have an interest in me. When I see someone, this is the one who made the sun? The one who made the stars? Yes. We were born, and in kindergarten they told us Hashem likes you. Very nice, Hashem likes me. And then when David grew up and started studying the sun, he said, what? That's the Hashem who likes me? The one who made all that? He's the Hashem who likes me? Oh, it suddenly took on a whole new dimension. It suddenly means something else. When I start really hopping who Hashem is, it suddenly stops not making sense. You're awed. You say, yeah, there's this nice Hashem. Someone calls Hashem. We learned about him in kindergarten. He likes me, wants me to do mitzvahs. He's sad if I don't do mitzvahs. And they tell you, don't listen to mommy, Hashem is sad. Okay. But you see what Hashem is? So David couldn't understand it. He said, so how can it be that you're interested in me? But Hashem says, I am. This drove David, motivated David to dedicate himself in a very, very extreme way to Hashem, says, quite what Hashem is. And how tiny and insignificant I am in relation to Hashem. Oh, it creates a whole different dynamic in the relationship. I can't believe that Hashem is interested in me. That itself, the Chavis Havana says, is an unbelievable cause for gratitude. That such a great being should take an interest in tiny little me, you should be blown over by that, and that itself should motivate you to throw yourself into Hashem's service. But again, if you never took note of these things, if Hashem is just the smiley figure from kindergarten, and he never became any bigger in your mind, so okay, sometimes I can accommodate Hashem, sometimes I don't accommodate Hashem. Right? Sometimes it's easier for me to do mitzvahs, sometimes it's not. You understand quite what Hashem is, it takes on a whole different meaning. And we have another puzzle in Yeshaya, expressing the amazement from Hashem's angle when we fail to do this. Yeshaya says, this is Yeshaya Mem Beis Yudches, where Hashem says, Hashem is expressing the opposite. Have you never noticed the foundation of the earth? How can it be that people just so flippantly go around
transgressing or defying Hashem's will. You know that Hashem wants you to do something. Hashem says, did you just never notice who I am? You didn't notice how immense earth is? You never took note? So the truth is that yes, we're talking more than religion here. It's not so much an issue of religion. Religion is just an issue of... No, we're talking about Menschlichkeit. We're talking about Menschlichkeit. We're talking about taking note of quite what Hashem is and the things that He's actually done for you. Often we're just talking about examples of Hashem's greatness. But we'll see soon, when you start breaking down what He did for you, we're talking about Menschlichkeit. If Hashem is busy running these great systems of nature, and besides that, running all of your bodily functions on a regular basis, running your respiratory system, running your digestive system, running your immune system, running your nervous system, Hashem is busy with that 24/7. Hashem is much more involved with you than you are. You notice all these things. It's Menschlichkeit that you should turn and relate to Hashem in a basic way. Don't just walk through life like this, with your hand behind your back, kind of tell Hashem, here, you stick things into my hand is behind my back, I'll never turn around once to notice who it is. It's an issue of Menschlichkeit, and that's not an issue of piety, it's not an issue of religion. Who's doing these things for you all the time? You're just going through life, Hashem is piling things on your plate, so you just eat without ever looking up to see who actually put those things on your plate. And therefore, Taka, moving to some more psukim. How does Kehelis express this? How does Shlomo HaMelech express this? HaChacham Einav Beroishoy V'Aksil Hoylech B'Choyshech. The Chacham has his eyes in his head, while the fool walks in darkness. In other words, the Chacham walks around alert to what's going on around him. He takes note. If I have hands, someone made me those hands. If I have food, someone gave me that food. And therefore he looks around. Einav Beroishoy, he's got eyes in his head. He's alert. He's taking note. He's looking around to see. Hey, this food on my plate, he looks up to see who put it there. It's like the Maharal says, wake up in the morning, the first thing you're supposed to do is daven, right? Because we have Allah. We'll discuss this in the time. There's a halacha that when you wake up in the morning you shouldn't engage in any activities. The first thing you should do is daven. So Maharal says, what's the pshat on this? You wake up in the morning, you were created anew. The first thing to note before starting to worry about what's for breakfast is, wait a minute, first notice something fundamental. I exist. I don't just roll into the day. I exist is already buried somewhere deeply in your consciousness. You woke up, you were created. Note, I exist. That's a chiddush. I exist, that means I was just created. So turn around and look who just created you. The same way we understand that if someone shoves something into your hand, a person is, let's say, collecting money, and someone puts $100 bill in his hand, it's only mental to turn around and see who did it. That person might want to duck away, so you shouldn't see. Fine. That's his business. But you should see who did it. Don't just say, oh, why shouldn't I have $100 in my hand? Or if someone gives you a gift. Say you're a Baal Simcha. Right? People are coming over to you. And they're handing you gifts. So don't just, you know, I'm in the middle of talking to somebody now. So I go like this. You know, you turn around. Anybody wants to put gifts, put the gifts into my hand. I stand like this and I'm talking to the person in that direction. That's a lack of Menschlichkeit. Someone gave you something. Look at the person. See who gave it to you. The most basic thing. So you wake up in the morning. You exist. Note that. One minute. Don't get all busy with your day. First, take note. I was just created. It's mental to turn around and look. Who just created me? That's what we're doing when we're davening. I was just created. I was just granted existence. Who granted me that existence? Take note of that. Without any of this, what sort of relationship do you have with Hashem? If Hashem is just an abstract person, but you're not starting to look and see concrete things in your life that Hashem is busy doing for you. So, what sort of relationship do you have with Him? Yes, you're aware of His existence. but it's a very fluffy and hazy awareness. Therefore, the next step in this system of building a relationship with Hashem is starting to really notice and experience Hashem in our mind, which in our lives, in the world around us, which is what the Chavis of Alavis calls Sha'ar HaBechina. Starting to notice Hashem, because the truth is that our lives are full. Hashem is busy with us all the time. And most of the time we are mamish like the person who's looking in one direction and has his hand stretched out, never bothering. He's busy, he's having things put into his hand all the time. He puts them straight into his mouth, he has things being put into his hand, busy eating them, never once bothers to turn around to see who it is. Our lives are full of benefits that we're so used to and so taken for granted that we never even bother to note that we have them, let alone bother to turn around and look at who's giving them to us. So we have to start making a bit of an endeavor to start noticing these things in order to really appreciate two things. Number one, what is Hashem doing in my relationship with Hashem? If you just think, well, in this world, I'm here to suffer, pious suffering, be a righteous sufferer, and in the next world is where I get my reward. Even your righteous suffering. You know how many good things you have in your life? You know what a good place this world is? Be a righteous sufferer. He eats cholent on Shabbos with a long face, feeling very pious. And right, he suffers in the air-conditioned Beis Medrash with the krecht. He has to stop davening now. The pious sufferer. Oh, and also other things. Forget about the challenge and forget about the air conditioned Beis Medrash. He's busy again with that long face enjoying a working body. You know what sufferers are. So, what are you getting reward for? You're getting reward for having a proper relationship, a proper relationship with Hashem. Look what I do for Hashem in this world. And I'm waiting for the next world where I'll finally get something back from Him. The whole thing is off. The whole system is off. You have to start noticing our lives are full of things that we have from Hashem, but we're oblivious to them for a number of reasons. That is Hashem I want to address next week. Actually get to a bit more of a practical system of learning to note these things. But the number one thing is, start learning to note these things. Realize, appreciate the necessity to start learning these things in order to be able to claim that I have a real relationship with Hashem. So that's number one. There are really two elements to this. Noting Hashem's kindliness. Rabbi Yehuda breaks this into two separate mitzvahs to say. Noting Hashem's kindliness to you, which requires a lot of study, a lot of taking note, a lot of working backwards and stopping to take for granted things that you've been living with all the time. We'll see, we'll analyze that as a Hashem. And number two is studying Hashem's greatness. As we said now, all of Hashem's kindliness towards you is compounded exponentially when you realize quite how great Hashem is. It's one thing if there's somebody who has a little more money, you know, a little better position than you, and he tries to help you out. When someone is so great, and you are so insignificant, and the very fact that he takes notice of you is already an unbelievable privilege. And the fact that he takes such an intimate relationship with you compounds the privilege even more. So these are two elements that we have to learn to start studying in order to start making our relationship with Hashem concrete. Number one, Hashem's kindliness, and number two, Hashem's greatness. And therefore, really, the next step for us is to start learning how to get into details. And Avigdor Miller always used to say, everything is nothing. What does that mean? He said, oh, of course, I know Hashem does everything for me. And I'm grateful to Hashem for everything. I appreciate everything. What are you saying? I haven't noticed a thing. It's a cop-out. It's an escape. Think about it. Two people come to someone for Shabbos. After the Suda, one of them tells the hostess, everything was delicious. The other person tells the hostess, I noticed the flavoring of the soup, and the fish was very well done. And he starts pointing out the different details. The first one is just an escape. He has to be polite. They didn't bother to think about it too much. Again, he shoved the food in, enjoyed it. But to start thinking about breaking it down to detail, he doesn't have the class. Oh, thanks for everything. It's an escape. That's what it is. It's a cop-out. If you really want to be appreciative, you break it down to details. So therefore, for a person, if you come away from what we've been discussing tonight and you say, Yes, I realize that everything in my life is from Hashem. Okay, you haven't really gotten anywhere. Everything is nothing. You start breaking it down to details, and you start really learning to take note of things, then you will find your appreciation of Hashem deepening, and the mela, the dynamics of your relationship with Hashem changing. And also, and this is part of Hashem's agenda, you'll find yourself enjoying this world more. But you suddenly start learning to note all kinds of benefits that you have, but you never took notice of, you start enjoying it more. Right? So for example, when we came to see our apartment, we were very, very, so it was a beautiful apartment, the apartment that we're living in now. It's a beautiful apartment, to the extent that it even felt like funny, what we're going to buy that apartment, that maybe it's a little bit big on us. And our parents encouraged us, my parents, my in-laws, oh, we should get it, and they'll help us. And when we first moved into that apartment, we came from a tiny little apartment that we had been renting in Yerushalayim. This was a duplex, big living room. And first couple of days, we were not much excited. It was like two little kids in a hotel. By now, a good old apartment. I come out and notice. Sometimes, every once in a while, my wife and I, we sit down and we say, well, let's try to go back to picturing it again. Let's walk through the door and picture it the way we saw it the night we came to see it. It's enjoyable. So that's another fringe benefit that Hashem wants us to have also. You learn to start noting these things, you learn to enjoy them too. That's part of what Hashem wants. Like we said before, Hashem is not the mean deity who's just there testing you, right? Saying, alright, look, here's the deal, this is the test. You succeed, you go to paradise, tip the tack. Not, I'll just chuck you into hell and that'll be that. And the whole point is that you should suffer for me in this world. No, when I realize that Hashem loves us, wants us to enjoy, the purpose of the Torah is to grant us the means of enjoying both this world and the next. It's not just about suffering through this world in order to get to the next world. So by learning to note all the things that Hashem is doing for us, not only will we be enhancing our relationship with Hashem, but we'll be learning to enjoy our setup that Hashem provided for us in this world too. This is Hashem. Next week we will move on to actually analyzing what it is that stops us from noticing these things and how we go about noticing them. If anybody is interested in asking questions, turn the recorder back on. The Mesilas Yeshurim says, how do we know that this world was not created for its own sake, that the purpose is Olam Haba? Because of how imperfect our existence in this world is. Who already has it perfect in this world? How much suffering is there in this world? How does that work with what we were just discussing? So the truth is that here's a profound point that really deserves a whole shiur in itself, but I'll just present the point very briefly. We are meant to take notice of the imperfections of this world, notwithstanding everything we've been discussing about how we have to start noting what a great place this world is. To the extent that Chazal say, we know that suffering, Yisurim, is a very great means of kapara. The Chazal say, what's an example of suffering? If a person sticks his hand into his pocket for a dime and comes up with a nickel, and oh shoot, he's got to stick his hand into his pocket again. That's suffering. Okay? Now, if we're going to take this at face value, we are going to turn into the biggest kvetches around. Right? If that's the level of suffering and how much we suffer, life is just terrible. Right? Every time a shoelace snaps, that's Yisurim. But Chazal is saying, no. Take note of it. Usually I have a good-natured person, he sticks his hand in for the... comes out with the wrong key. Okay, he sticks his hand in again, he doesn't complain. No, but Chazal wants us to know it. Why? Because the truth is that yes, our world and our life is full of benefits. But if we really appreciate the fact that Hashem is running our lives, there should be no setbacks at all for a person to say, look, life is not going to be perfect. How do you understand that if you really understand that Hashem is running your life? If you really have reached a deep appreciation of the fact that Hashem is intimately involved with you and He never looks away for a second, how do you understand the fact that 10 years ago you scraped your knee? How could that be? On the contrary, viewing these things as Yisurim is supposed to come from a very deep awareness of how involved Hashem is with you, that yes, you do notice all these imperfections, and they're incongruous with all the kindliness that Hashem is doing for us. And therefore, you learn to note these things as messages from Hashem, instead of just saying, well, that's the way the world works. That's the way the world works. That means that Hashem is involved with you in a general way, not mamish in a detailed way. And yes, when Hashem turns away for a second, you might bang your knee. But no, when a person is living with a deep appreciation of Hashem and a deep awareness of how Hashem is with him mamish 24 hours a day, then why is the world not absolutely perfect? Why is there any inconvenience, let alone suffering? Why should I ever be sick? Why are people seriously sick? Now, if a person just takes this approach, he's missing the boat. The chokhmah is to be able to see all the kindliness and then to say these tiny imperfections are incongruous to the extent that, yes, coming up with the wrong key disturbs me. Why should Hashem do that? And therefore I understand that, no, there's something missing in our state. Whether it's because of Averis, or whether it's because in general, we don't have the Geula. The fact that you stick your hand into your pocket and come up with the wrong key is a manifestation of the fact that we don't have the Shechina with us with the intensity that we would like to. And Davka seeing all of Hashem's kindliness should make it all the more disturbing for us. It's true. A person who's not living with that awareness of Hashem's kindness is not so bothered by the fact that he came up with the wrong key. But a person is seeing things that Hashem is doing to him left and right, and then he comes up with the wrong key, why did that happen? And certainly when he gets a strep throat. And certainly when it's something even more serious than that. We're supposed to be very aware of the imperfections of this world in order to note that as much as we do have Hashem's te'aras panim, we want more. We want to bring it to a perfect situation, whether as a result of our being on a perfect level, and therefore Hashem is always just doing kindliness with us, or by understanding that our existence is not the ultimate existence. The ultimate existence is supposed to be when we have Hashem with us in an open, unconcealed way. Or in other words, when Mashiach comes. And to get us to long for that. And on the contrary, the more we see Hashem's involvement with us, the more that should highlight and make it painful when we see, but yet Hashem is still not willing to make it all inclusive. That's why Rachim and Birkas HaMazon, we'll end with this. I don't want to take too long, but Rachim and Birkas HaMazon, we start with Noi Delecha. We know all the great things Hashem is doing for us. And then we move into Rachim and Hashem Alekein Al Yisrael Anacha. What's going to be with Klal Yisrael? What's going to be with Yerushalayim? What's going to be with all our Tzaris? It seems like a bit of a stark contrast. We just said, oh, Hashem gave us this, and He gave us this, and He gave us this, and He's all the time giving us food, and life, and grace. That's on the contrary. We say all that, and we say, so Hashem, why can't we just have it all the way around? Why can't we have the Binyan Beis HaMikdash if You're giving us all that? It's not the if we're seeing everything that Hashem is doing with us, but we say the imperfections hurt even more. Because Hashem is still showing a certain distance. That's in a nutshell.